strange as it seems, I can't stop dreaming a dream.
Dreaming, dreaming.
Strange as it seems, I can't stop dreaming a dream.
Dreaming.
Welcome to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. I'm Brandon. I'm here with Kevin.
Hello, Brandon.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay.
Has the tryptophan worn off from Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Good.
Yes. Yeah, everything is breaking now instead.
Everything's... Yeah, I'm having a little bit of that myself. What do you have breaking in your life?
Well, we had our washing machine broke.
Yeah.
And we were actually able to get it fixed.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you. Knock on wood. It's 25 years old, and it's still, now it's working just fine again.
You gotta love that.
It can actually be fixed, right? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Day before...
Look at that. You know what that might be? That might be the most dependable millennial that you know.
Stop it.
Okay. Just kidding, millennials. I love you.
Day before Thanksgiving, I hit a pothole, and there's like a splash shield under the front of my red Volvo.
Yeah.
And it tore that half off. So it was raining day before Thanksgiving, and I'm in the middle of the road, not in the middle of the road, I pulled off to the side, trying to find some way to tie this thing back up until I could get it home.
I hate moments like that so much.
I pulled... I was heading to a metal recycler, and I had a plastic, like a garbage bag, a kitchen garbage bag full of metal cans.
Okay.
And I took the plastic handle off of that.
Oh, no.
Lay down in the dirty road gutter and kind of tied that back up. And it stayed up all the way home. Right until I got to right at my driveway, and our neighbor staying outside, and he was waving to me, and I waved to him, and then all of a sudden it came down and was grinding along the ground. So I made a good impression there.
It's always good to make a nice impression like that.
And then on my silver Volvo, the window, well, the door handle had broken on that one, so you have to open the door from the outside.
Yeah.
So I rolled down the window to open the door, and the window just went all the way into the door.
Oh, no. I'm sorry for laughing at that. That's,
So if you ever need the worst shower curtain ever, go to the dollar store.
Yeah.
Get a dollar shower curtain, and you can just tape that into that space there.
Like everything's in the dollar store.
Until you can decide if either you're going to push that car over a cliff, get it fixed... Or, I don't know if there's a third option.
Are you still trying to decide?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and, yeah, something else broke, too. It's always, so we had...
You were talking about an alternator recently. Was that one of those cars?
Yeah, Eileen's car. The alternator went out.
So, Eileen, second... that's different than your two Volvos?
Correct. She has a Dodge Grand Caravan.
All right.
I have two Volvos because it's always one's working at any one time.
Yes. This is the Woosley way.
One is going to be our for the children to drive when they start driving in a few years. So, because they're very safe and slow.
Your children? That's not a nice thing to say.
The cars.
Oh, the cars. Yeah, that makes sense. That tracks more. I've had trouble keeping up with your kids, so I didn't think safe and slow.
Thank you.
Sounded
Thank
right. You. No. Yeah, we have things breaking here as well. We are having trouble with our dryer venting system.
Oof.
So the dryer is now not wanting to dry things. It's not the fault of the dryer. It's that the vent is not clearing.
Well, and that can cause fires, too.
Sure can.
Or, well, one. At least one fire.
Well, I mean, if you're, if you're enough, really persistent, right? You could be like, you could start your house on fire and just be like, you know what? We're going to try that again. You could start multiple fires. I wouldn't recommend it.
That would be my luck. It would start one fire, and then I'd be like, oh boy, whoa, fire. And then all of a sudden, another one starts.
I think you start the fire, and then you put it out, and you're like, what are the chances that would happen again?
Boom.
Wow. I guess I'm not a statistician. So I have that. I found out today that one of my wisdom teeth has finally come in.
I was really surprised to hear that you still have your wisdom teeth.
My wisdom teeth had never come all the way in.
Had mine, but I had them removed anyway.
They didn't want to remove mine. And now one of mine came in, and it has clanged into another molar and caused enough trouble that now the wisdom tooth and the second molar have to come out. So that's pretty exciting. Good times here on the coast.
That is why they take them out earlier.
I know, but they didn't want to. They said, they should be fine in there.
Yeah,
apparently,
that dentist...
I had very laissez-faire dentists all this time.
Your dentist was really just in it for the laughing gas.
That's it.
I have another appointment with Dr. Feelgood if you can get out of here now.
I don't know. Like I said, I think I'm going to assume that it was just, you know, there was a dentist that didn't want to do anything that wasn't emergent. Just like, it's a real small government kind of dentist.
You know, I've gone to mechanics like that too, where you take the car in and they're like, I got these problems. They're like, it's this. I could do just this part and it should get you by for a few months. I'm like, but why wouldn't you just actually fix the whole problem? I'll just try to save you some money. Yeah, but I don't...
But eventually I'm going to spend that money, right?
Right. I mean, I'd like the peace of mind. If
there
you
is
that,
too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Also, I finally have power steering again in my car.
That's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. I've forgotten how much I enjoy that.
Have you ever had a car without power steering? That was...
The Mustang,
right. Yeah. Yes, Brandon had a 1965 Mustang Golf Cart Edition, right?
Golf Cart Edition? Oh, yeah,
and,
right.
It had been a golf,
it,
right.
It had
before
a
you
golf
bought
cart,
it, somebody had been using it as a golf cart.
Yeah, right. You're right. Which is why, I don't know if you remember this, I was doing my early driving practice on my Mustang, which had no power steering. And then one day, Dad decided to take me out in his car to do some driving practice. His car at this time was, I think it was a 1978 Chrysler New Yorker. So
big.
it was like 28 feet long.
Yeah.
And obviously had power steering because it was massive. It weighed 17 tons. And so it had power steering, but it was like this super floaty, super sensitive power,
right.
Power steering.
No, I remember that. I drove those too, yeah.
So my first experience with trying to drive that car.
Oh, you just pulled it into a ditch, didn't you?
No, so great. This is so good. Wait. So we start driving out from the house, and we get onto, what is that? Is that Spring and Scooth? Oh, I don't remember which road that is. When you got out of our house on Weymouth, and then you turned to head toward
Hartman?
Hartman, yeah, that's it. So we turn on to Hartman, and I'm coming to an intersection, and Dad says, so you're going to go ahead and turn right here. So as I get closer to it, I start to apply some brake. I'm used to having no power brakes.
Right, so, yeah.
So I hit it, at which point Dad, who...
wouldn't wear a seatbelt,
he didn't
right?
really believe in wearing seatbelts, right? Because he believed that was... part of the man oppressing him. I taught him why seatbelts are a good idea. Because this is not exaggeration, I think he ended up on the dash. Like the 78 New Yorker had a big enough dash that you could like sleep up there. And so I hit the brake and poof, he is up on the dash.
Yeah, yeah.
So then he crawled down off the dash. And was like, okay, maybe less brake next time.
I'm sure he was super calm about that because he was always very chill about everything.
That's his way.
No drama Dale. That was what people called him.
Yeah. You know, I believe on the bowling league, his nickname was always Zen Daddy. So. Pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right.
That sounds right, yeah. So I'm in the middle of the road because I have ground the car to a halt trying to just slow down. So then he's like, okay, so you're going to take your foot off the brake. We're going to start moving forward again. Then you're going to make the right turn onto this street. And so I take the foot off the brake, thinking about that. And then I go to make the turn, and I pull the wheel so hard that I basically, I turned before I got to the intersection. So yeah, but I actually went right up on the sidewalk.
Oh, see, and he probably, you went up over a curb? And he was probably, oh, I bet he was chill about that, too.
He was super chill. Yeah, so.
Since he's the sort of guy that would get upset if, like, when you were parking up against a curb, if you hit the curb with the side of your tire.
I believe that was a section where curb it's, like, those really low, like, sloping curbs.
Okay, so it wasn't too bad.
We didn't, yeah.
Right. It was just more like.
But yeah.
Like grounding a boat.
But it's very much like grounding a boat. In the end, I was still perpendicular to the road, halfway on a parkway. So he wasn't that excited about it.
Now, see, if I think back there, you had to turn to get, back out of something. You had to turn several times before that spot.
I don't remember why this went so
bad. You were already because of the, and with the braking, too. But maybe because you just hadn't built up some speed and so
forth. I think so. I have the feeling that he already had the car in the street, and I just drove it up to the end of the street, gently, like slowly, stopped at the stop sign there, and then from a stop, made the turn out onto Hartman, which is different than trying to turn while you're moving, and I don't know.
Maybe you start to get a little comfortable.
Here's another thing. And I wasn't good at driving yet at that point. So
I also went
I'd driven
up
like a 9 miles at that point.
my first time behind the wheel was an actual driver's ed lesson.
Yeah.
Mom and Dad did not take me out before that.
Because it went so well when they had me.
But I said to them, I'm probably supposed to go out before that. Everyone else has already talked about how they've been going out with their parents. No, I don't think so. And so I get behind the wheel there, and I also pulled myself up onto a curb.
Yeah.
And the driver's ed instructor was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know how to drive.
I have to assume a lot of driver's ed classes end up on curbs and parkways.
I mean, right? There's lots of great stories. From driving when we were younger. We don't need to talk about how I drove your car when I didn't have a license.
Oh, no, let's not talk about that today. We'll save that for some other time. Yeah.
I remember
that was the one where we then went out and thought the car was stolen.
Oh, did you?
I think so.
Well.
Anyway.
Technically, it was.
Technically. Statute of limitations passed on that? Because I never pressed charges.
Oh, you know what? I never pressed charges because I had to... when helping Dad work on your car...
Yeah.
Okay. There was this fuel line. He's like, we got to get this fuel line. It's clogged. He's like, I want you to blow into the one end of the fuel line. I'm like, okay, this is a terrible idea. Put my lips on this 25-year-old fuel line, and then I blow into it.
Uh-huh.
And then he blows back and blows fuel into my mouth. That was terrible. It was truly horrible.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And of course, he said, what did you do?
Of course he did. This is what he says.
We could do a whole episode
Are we talking about Zen Daddy again?
Yeah. About the fun of working on cars with him.
Oh, my gosh.
Because we have enough experience having worked on cars to probably know what we're doing. But I don't think either one of us has any interest whatsoever.
No.
In doing any work on cars.
Oh, no. It terrifies me. I'm so I'm so much less confident about working on a car than doing almost anything else. Because I just have that in my head that I'm going to screw that up.
Not that jacket! No!
No.
I said three ace!
I would probably rather try to land a plane.
Blindfolded. While getting buggered by a horse.
Wow. Well, maybe at that point I go back to, yeah, I could try changing the oil.
I actually have quite a bit of experience now changing tires.
Yeah.
Because
I've done a lot of that.
I also feel like anytime I see somebody on the side of the road with a flat tire,
yeah,
somebody should stop and help them.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Also, you're a AAA tow truck driver now, aren't you?
I'm a repo man, actually.
Good. So I got to take your car, but first we're going to fix this tire. Because I can't drive it on the rims.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is good. I don't even remember why we started talking about dad and cars, but I love it.
Why I did? Yeah, that's a good question.
But here's what I want to talk about. I want you have mentioned something to me.
Oh, yes.
And this becomes part of an important recurring segment.
It is now. It's.
Yeah, clearly. So our...
We need a name for this segment.
I think the name of the segment is KFC Merch Watch. Okay, KFC Merch Watch. So we've previously talked about the KFC scented Crocs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did we identify, do they taste like chicken too?
No. Okay. I don't think they have a taste, I think. Just the scented gibbets or whatever.
I think, is it the gibbets that are scented or is it the shoe that's scented?
I don't remember.
Anyway.
Spot, so there's this that. Was the time you had to drink? You've had all night to drink. Can you hear him drinking?
I cannot.
I can. It's just rattling around in my head.
So right, anyway, the KFC Crocs, and now you tell us there's more merch to know about.
Yes, and apparently this is, I think, from what I understood, the third year that they've done this. It is a Kentucky Fried Chicken, 11 herbs and spices chicken scented Yule log.
Yeah. Okay. So you put this
It's like a fire starter. It's made by Enviro Flame or I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. They don't need my PR. Right. So you use it to start your fire in your fireplace, or I suppose in your fire pit outside, mm-hmm. if you want to attract lots of raccoons and such to your outside fire pit. You burn it and it smells like Kentucky Fried Chicken.
That's so confusing. Why do I want my fireplace to smell like Kentucky Fried Chicken? Why do I want any place to smell like Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Right, yeah. I mean... And so you brought this up. Did the Crocs taste like chicken? I'm guessing you were thinking if you licked them.
Yeah, or chewed on them.
See, my recollection of Kentucky Fried Chicken is, I would guess you could probably bite into this Yule log and it will taste like Kentucky Fried Chicken. Even without any effort to...
Because it's probably made out of like sawdust and glue and paper.
Right.
So yeah. 11 herbs and spices.
So that's, you know, and I want to make a point of this, too, because you got I'm getting completely off subject here, but why not? You have, Kentucky Fried Chicken who talks about their 11 herbs and spices.
Yeah.
You have, Dr. Pepper that talks about their 23 whatever flavor ingredients, you know?
Yeah.
And there's other products where they kind of tout that. I'm like, isn't that just called a recipe?
It is. It is.
Oh, wow. You have 11 ingredients in your recipe?
Wow. Fancy that. Well, keep in mind, when they started talking about that, that probably was a big deal. This was probably at a time where the average American kitchen for spices had salt, pepper.
Now, you make a fair point. But I think it's also that that was at a time when it just, that sounded impressive, when people perhaps weren't as jaded by the constant barrage of marketing like we are now at this point.
It's true. Now we have pumpkin spice scented toilet paper.
Are you serious?
I believe I did see that this season, yeah. But this is not pumpkin spice merch watch. This is KFC merch watch. So until we have KFC scented pumpkin spice, I got lost in a
chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be great. So I just to close the loop on this, you can acquire this product at select Walmarts. I don't think you've ever used select in Walmart in a.
I was going to say
what's something the... like exclusivity. Oh, at Walmart Select.
Oh, this is one of the good Walmarts. So instead of select, it really should say at your finer Walmarts. Yeah. All right. Well, I live a half an hour from a Walmart.
Well, you should check online and see if your Walmart has. I looked because I thought, should I actually do this? Should I get this product? And I have made the decision so far not to. But there are several Walmarts closer to me than the closest one that has this product.
You'd have to go some distance for the KFC log.
Yeah, it'd probably be about a 20-minute drive. It's still in Aurora, but it's right at the far east end of Aurora.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now that you've put that out there, there's going to be a run on logs. So everyone's going to be flocking to that Walmart.
No, I'm pretty certain this will sell out very quickly just because that's how this sort of thing works.
It's like McRib.
Because, and here's what's going to happen. 90% of these that someone will go and buy, will then, they'll put them on eBay or Facebook Marketplace or something like that at some massive markup.
Yeah.
Because they think this will be the sort of thing that everyone, you know, is going to have such a serious need to buy.
Right.
It's $12.88 at Walmart, by the way, as well. Which is considerably more expensive than your typical fire starter log.
I would think so. Well, it's because it's got the 11 herbs and spices.
Right, right. Oh, I know, it totally makes sense, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you get it. I mean, it's you gotta season that log.
I don't want anyone going and thinking they're just gonna get it at the regular fire starting log price.
No. No, actually, how much did you say it was? Because I'm looking at Walmart.com. It says $15.88. Is that what you said?
I said $12.88. It was $12.88 at is what it said.
Well, you live in flyover country, so that's probably why. Here I am, coastal elite. Yeah. That's what I'm all about. All right. So that was good. That's our KFC merch watch. Anytime that KFC merch is out there, we're going to let you know about it.
KFC merch watch.
Merch watch.
Yeah, I like that. We need a sound effect or a
we do need like little jingles and
for merch watch.
We perhaps need some talent to do that.
All right. That's fair enough.
I mean, I can make up a song.
Yeah, I could too.
All right, fine. Not being a step we on your toes.
Compete. No, we could compete for it, you know? We could collaborate. Oh, you know what? Wouldn't it be neat if you and I collaborated on something?
Collabs are the big thing nowadays, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will call my friend Bad Bunny, and I'll ask him if he can join us in a collab.
He is not your friend.
Sure he is.
He's everyone's friend. That's what you're saying?
He is.
He seems like he would be.
He's released 3 albums this year. Did you know that?
What?
Yeah.
I only know he exists because he has a shell phone.
It's a shell phone?
Have you heard seen these Corona beer commercials?
No.
Where he calls up Snoop Dogg?
No.
And Snoop Dogg says, you know, who's this? Hey, you can't be calling me on my shell phone. And he says, it's Bad Bunny. Although I thought it was Mad Bunny. And then he says, oh, what you doing, player? And then Bad Bunny says, no, playa, like beach.
Oh.
And then there's an extended version of the commercial now where Snoop says, I know what the playa is. I'm from Long Beach or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then Bad Bunny says something in Spanish, and the commercial ends.
Wow. I got to check that out. I haven't seen that at all.
He's wearing, like, this one-piece kind of jumper, like a short sleeve shorts jumper thing, open all the way down to, like, his navel.
Wow.
And he's got, like, a headband on, I think. Some sunglasses.
No, I have not.
He seems likable,
yeah,
from that, you know, perspective, but...
No, I haven't seen it. This is J Balvin country around here.
So I don't even know what J Balvin is either. I know that there's a McDonald's J Balvin meal or there whatever.
There is. Yes.
Which seems to be just like a regular value meal. I don't know.
It's specific things that J Balvin wanted in his meal. So the two of them are both superstars of reggaeton.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
So I was just dropping some of my reggaeton knowledge there for now, the kids.
Reggaeton, is that similar to reggae?
Actually, that's interesting. It is. I don't know a lot about reggaeton, but if I understand it correctly, it is. It was built off of reggae, but it was in Puerto Rico.
Okay, very good.
And so it's essentially a Puerto Rican inflection of reggae. So it's a lot of reggae beats, but then Puerto Ricans made it their own.
Well, that sounds nice.
Yeah.
All right, so...
So, speaking of Puerto Ricans, that makes me think of my favorite Puerto Rican. Honestly, favorite Puerto Rican, Javier Baez.
Yes.
See, there I made a transition.
My current favorite Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm. And as I think about Javier Baez, I think about the Chicago Cubs. This has been a wild couple of weeks for the Chicago Cubs. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about,
mm-hmm.
Seeing as we have both been long-standing Cub fans,
mm-hmm.
Is three big changes. I'll tick them off for people that haven't been following this because they don't care like we do. In the last couple of weeks, first of all, Theo Epstein, who was brought in as the club president 9 years ago, and was really the architect of this era of Cubs success, which is honestly the most sustained period of success the Cubs have had since the first decade of the 1900s. So,
well, no, because we were talking about this. We were breaking it down into the three war periods.
That's true. That's right? True.
So you have the post-Spanish-American War period, and the 1900s. So, one of the best periods of time for any professional franchise.
Yeah. Well, other than the Yankees, behind like many runs of the Yankees, but yeah.
Right, but so did the Yankees have, in terms of like winning percentage and such, over a period of years like that?
I would have to check.
Because the Cubs averaged over 100 wins for like a five-year period.
Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty impressive when you only played, what, like
154 games.
Right, yeah.
It's true. It's true. And they went to the World Series 4 out of 5 seasons. Yeah. And then from 1929 to 1938, they went to the World Series 4 times in that 10 years.
Right, so the post-World War I period.
Yeah, so they had a post-World War I bump there. And then post-World War II, they went to the World Series in 1945 and then took a break. That was it for post-World War II. Then there was post-Korea, post-Vietnam, post-Gulf War, post, war on drugs, war on terror, Gulf War II.
Yeah, I think the post Gulf War, the post war on, well, so we still have the war on terror.
Yeah.
That's never ended.
And we have the band The War on Drugs, so.
Right, so in the post Gulf War period, this is their most sustained success.
Yeah. By any standard, it's been a long time since they had this much success. So
correct, yes. This has been an excellent period.
And so Theo has decided to leave. And he's being replaced by Jed Hoyer, who had come in with him and who was really his right-hand man throughout all of this. It's kind of hard to tell. It doesn't necessarily feel like a massive change, but Theo gets an outsized percentage of the credit because he was also the architect behind the Red Sox breaking out of their streak of not having won a World Series.
Right.
Their long drought.
Right. 86 years, right?
Yeah, I think so. So anyway, you've got Theo left. Then, earlier this week was the date for what's called the non-tender deadline. So if you're not going to give somebody a contract, that's called non-tendering them, and then they become a free agent.
Right. Players who are still under team control, as in they're not eligible for free agency,
right,
the team does not offer them a contract and therefore grants them their free agency.
So it hasn't always, like in some years, at some periods of time, there aren't that many players who get non-tendered for a variety of reasons, I think, related to this weird pandemic season and other baseball economics, and they're looking at, they're going to change the collective bargaining agreement soon, or renegotiate it. A lot of players got non-tendered, and mm-hmm. the Cubs non-tendered a handful of guys. Most notable of them was Kyle Schwarber, who has been kind of a mythical figure in this period of Cubs success, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
In 2015, when they made it to the playoffs, probably a year earlier than anyone thought they would, had a big playoff series, including this massive home run that hit onto the top of the scoreboard in Wrigley Field.
Right field scoreboard.
Yes, right field scoreboard. Right. Thank you.
We don't want to make people think it's a center field
not
scoreboard.
Not the center field scoreboard. Yeah. Then in 2016, high hopes, big expectations for the year, and like the second game or third game, he blew out his knee. Had surgery.
ACL and LCL, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Had surgery, rehabbed it all season long, and came back for the World Series and played in the World Series that the Cubs won.
Right.
And then since then, he's struggled. He's you know, there's just his hitting style hasn't, I think a couple of things have happened. I think he's become more of an all or nothing kind of hitter than he used to be, than he maybe was when he first came up. And so selling out for more power. And as the game, as a lot of shifts started to happen, guys who were really pull centric, especially lefties who pull the ball a lot, were more often victimized by the shifts. And I think he was one of the players who probably really was affected by that.
Yeah, probably the most of any of the Cubs have a significant number of pull heavy hitters.
Yeah.
But guys like Anthony Rizzo or Chris Bryant, I don't think were as affected by that. They were more line drive type hitters. They did not necessarily put the ball on the ground as much. Kyle Schwarber, unfortunately, if he did not put it way up in the air, it was on the ground.
Right, right.
And you can't make it through the shift on the ground, mm-mm. generally speaking.
So the Cubs made the decision to non-tender him. So there's a chance that they'll re-sign him, but it sort of looks like his time as a Cub is over. And then, just yesterday, as we're recording this on a Friday, the Cubs announced that Len Casper, who has been the television play-by-play voice of the Cubs for 16 years,
mm-hmm.
is leaving. He has left and accepted an offer to be the radio play-by-play voice for the Chicago White Sox. So, this in its own way is a really huge deal because I don't know if you know this. Let's see if you realize this. I'm going to ask you two different questions. First of all, the Cubs have been on television for 73 years. Do you know how many play-by-play men they've had in those 73 years as like their regular play-by-play guy?
Like sixth?
Four.
So there was...
Jack Brickhouse for 34 years. Harry Carey for 16 years. An in-between person I'm not going to name yet for 7 years. And then Len Casper for 16 years.
So Jack Brickhouse was the first.
Yeah.
So I think when I'm thinking of other... They've had a number of other announcers. Those were either color men or radio booth.
Yeah. And it used to be that there were folks who, there were some of the broadcasters who I think would sort of split those. They would spend some time doing color commentary in the TV booth and work in the radio booth.
Well, and the radio booth used to be a lot more, there was a period of time when the radio booth probably had more audience than the television booth.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Probably up until, I mean, for some teams... I don't know, it could have been up until the 70s.
Yeah, I would think
so. Or 80s.
I think that's probably likely. Maybe even later than that for a lot of teams. Until, like, really cable boom happened. And interestingly enough... Oh, so okay, so first of all, so there's that. So there have only been four play-by-play guys. Brickhouse, Harry Carey, Len Casper. The fourth one is, do you remember?
Oh, it's Chip Carey.
It's Chip Carey, of course. I just want to see if your main, like, if your brain just blocked that out.
No, because I read something where somebody thought they should bring him back.
That's even worse than the thing that I read, which was that somebody said that they should bring in Josh Lewin.
What?
Uh huh. So if you're not familiar with this, folks, Josh Lewin has been a TV broadcaster a bunch of places, but he was also part of the radio team for the Cubs for a while.
So bad.
He was awful.
Maybe he's probably pretty young.
I don't know how he could have gotten worse. Maybe he's gotten better.
No, but, yeah, pair up with Joe Carter. Let's do this.
So anyway, so what I wanted to talk about with, so now we have, so those are three people who in each in their own way is like really kind of iconic. Theo, Kyle Schwarber, and Len Casper. I wanted to ask you two questions, or ask us together two questions. First of all, which one of those are you saddest about?
I think it is probably, without getting too complicated, because that can change it, I think it's probably Len Casper.
I agree with you. Absolutely. And I won't get too complicated, but I'll say exactly why. Because like, just the fact that Len Casper had already been doing this for 16 years points to the fact that when you've got a... like, the way the Cubs have always had that position, this is something you do for a long... These are generational jobs, mm-hmm. right? That you'd have a series of left fielders. Kyle Schwarber's not going to do it for 40 years. And,
right.
And
yeah, I mean, you like could have
Theo,
seen.
You knew Theo was going to leave. Theo said way back when he started that
he was
going to
be leaving
like,
after next year anyway, at the latest.
He had said from the beginning that he thought that after like 10 years, an executive ought to move on.
And it's been a bit of a mixed bag. I think he and Jed did a tremendous job of tearing down and rebuilding the team.
Yeah.
And from there, it's been a lot more miss than hit.
Yeah, I think so. Although, at the same time, I think it speaks to just how hard it is to sustain excellence when there are 30 teams.
Right. Yeah, and we talked about that in our If I Were Commissioner episode, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is I feel like it's...
It hasn't been magnificent. It hasn't been like you imagined this... That the golden era of the Cubs was going to be them just running roughshod over everybody. and after one championship season, it hasn't been that.
Right. I feel like it's not necessarily a significant change in the organization anyway. I mean, Jed Hoyer is, it's not like a major...
Oh, I hear what you mean. Yeah, you mean him leaving isn't a... Yes.
Right. Yeah, now, I think Jed will probably... I'm sure Jed has his own impulses and stuff. In fact, I have a... I'm fairly confident Theo could not have pulled the trigger on non-tendering Kyle Schwarber.
I think you're probably right.
So I think that is one difference. But... In general, I don't think this is a massive... It's not going to be the sort of change like we're going to see, you know, in the office of president.
Right.
The ideas on how to govern or to lead the Chicago Cubs are not going to be significantly different.
You're right. There's going to be a lot of continuity.
That's the word I was looking for.
There you go.
Thank you.
There it is.
I said it in a very awkward way. And then with Kyle Schwarber, I just never... I'm just never really on board.
Really?
He was always frustrating to me.
Yeah.
I mean, in 2015, that half season in those playoffs, yeah, it was pretty great. And I thought it was cool when he came back and for the World Series.
Yeah.
But other than that, he's been a largely frustrating player. His performance hasn't been, from an offensive standpoint, has been... you know, using advanced metrics, slightly better than average. But watching him play as well, I was just really tired of him being... of watching good pitches go by, getting behind in the count, and then swinging at a bad pitch and striking out. Or rolling over the bad pitch and grounding out to second. And he would do this thing where every season he would have a really nice stretch where he would not engage in those bad patterns. And you'd think, oh, hey, all right, let's just keep doing that.
Yeah.
And then it would go away. And I don't know what would tell me at this point, unless the Cubs organization has indeed been uniquely bad at developing and supporting its hitters. I don't know what would make anyone say that it's going to be significantly different going forward. And he was going to make so much money that I don't know that his performance was worth how much money you were going to be paying for him.
Right. Yeah, no, I can't disagree with you on that.
And I was always annoyed. I thought, okay, great, he had a 2015 postseason was cool, 2016 was cool, but the legend of Kyle Schwarber was annoying to me.
Yeah. And I don't think that's his fault, but I agree with you.
No, yeah.
It was because, well, in Chicago maybe other places do this. I don't know because Chicago sports is what I know, but Chicago's good at making cult figures quickly, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
We've got the cult of Ditka. And if you want to think about comparisons, right? Ditka basically was part of one monumental season, and then the team was never as good as it was supposed to be, and yet his cult never suffered for it.
Right.
So, something tells me that Kyle Schwarber won't have to buy a drink in Chicago for about as long as he wants.
You're probably right. Now, another guy got released, or got non-tendered.
Yeah.
Who was also a fairly big part of that 2016 World Series, even though it was really only one play.
Right. Albert Almora.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was a guy that I had pretty high hopes for as well.
Right.
And he just never was able to put together enough bat discipline, and he was a very good center fielder.
Yeah.
But he wasn't quite as elite as people had thought he might be.
Right.
And considering that he couldn't hit, very good wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
For what the team needed him to do.
And when you say couldn't hit, I mean, like, the power never developed for him. and he didn't develop really impressive on-base skills. Right. So there wasn't any side of it. He couldn't even look and say, well, he's sort of a one-sided player. We're like with Schwarber, there was always this elite power. But Almora just never quite put it together. And it's a shame because he seemed like a really great guy. And then again,
yeah,
you know, he's when you think of big things that you remember from that World Series run, his that play where he gets put in to pinch run
for Kyle Schwarber.
That's right. And then tags up from first base to advance to second. And that's a key tag up because then he scores on a subsequent hit, right? That's the stuff you remember. But on the other hand, you know, good franchises, good organizations don't keep guys around forever because they had a good feel-good, you know, they had one feel-good moment.
Cubs used to. In some ways, Cubs would keep certain guys around.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I could ever say why they did it. Did they do it because it was for feel-good reasons or because they bought into the fact that they would still eventually come back to what they had once shown they could be or because they were cheap? Right. I don't know. But
or because so in that regard, into that fan cult thing, right?
Right. This does not. I mean, there is absolutely the possibility that Kyle Schwarber will find a team and will play better. Mm-hmm. The Cubs have had a different hitting coach every year for the last 4 years.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, something's not right there. I'd like to think. Some people talk about hitting coaches being kind of superfluous and their value being overblown, but I do feel like there's probably some element to which the Cubs have, things have been kind of weird on the offensive end, and it's not
right.
Been good for their talent.
Yeah,
something has not helped their talent to continue to progress.
Right, and unless you're going to argue that coaches have been a scam all this time and coaches have no value, then I think you'd have to argue that changing coaches every single year so that you're having to build a new relationship, get a new voice, you know, a different approach, all that can't be helpful.
Right. Yeah.
Unless you want to do some kind of college of coaches thing. No. Yeah, we'll save that conversation for another time. Oh, we already had that conversation another time. Yeah.
The most frustrating thing about Kyle Schwarber to me is that I'd have felt better if he had left the team 3 or 4 years ago at a higher value and brought something back in return.
Would you have felt better? So think about this. This is one of those what ifs, right? So the Yankees reportedly wanted Kyle Schwarber to consummate the trade for Aroldis Chapman.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016. Mm-hmm. Now, who knows if that's true or not? He was still rehabbing the injury at that point. But instead, the Cubs traded Gleyber Torres. Mm-hmm. So would you have felt better if they had kept Gleyber Torres and Kyle Schwarber had been a Yankee for the last 5 years?
I mean, at this point, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Not that Gleyber Torres is...
he seems to not quite have fully developed yet either, does he?
Right. He's a bit rougher on the edges. However, he is, for instance, better than what we have at second base right now.
What do we have at second base
right That's now? Why he's better than it. I mean, we've gone through Daniel Descalso and Jason Kipnis and...
I was going to say, I think we have just a post-it note with Jason Kipnis' contact information at second base right now.
So it... he was certainly at least serviceable.
Yeah.
And Kyle, so he's probably serviceable at that position in the same way that Kyle Schwarber has been serviceable.
Yeah.
To us, so that may have been a push, but I don't know. Gleyber Torres, I think, fills a different need that the Cubs would have had. Now, on the other hand, was having Kyle Schwarber around for the World Series in 2016 was that actually difference-making? In which case, if we had not had... Because Gleyber Torres would have been at single A then.
Yeah.
If we didn't have Kyle Schwarber, would the outcome be have been different? In which case, then obviously, it was worth keeping him.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, but we had opportunities to trade Kyle Schwarber. The Yankees would have taken him off our hands any time in the last 4 years.
Yes.
If anyone has as close to as big a man crush on Kyle Schwarber as Theo Epstein, it's... Why can't
Brian,
I remember his name?
Brian, why can't I think of his name either? Oh, wow, this is good. This is good podcasting. Brian Cashman.
Yes. I remember the Brian part. Yeah. There's lots of Brians.
So many Brians. Yeah. Although, ironically, I mean, if you think about it, the Yankees basically are made up of like 7 DHs at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a good chance they don't go after him.
Yeah, I don't know that he has as much, he gives them as much at this point.
No.
But, I mean, and there was also some talk that Kyle Schwarber might have been able to be a part of the deal for Jose Quintana instead of Eloy Jimenez.
Yeah.
And that one, I would much rather have Eloy Jimenez now.
Yeah.
Even though he might not be any better in left field than Kyle Schwarber.
Right.
I think he's...
Yeah.
Still got some interesting potential.
He does.
I mean, we'll see
very
what happens.
So we're in agreement.
But Len Casper, yes, I feel like Len Casper, having heard other announcers, even if Len Casper at times was a little bit plain.
Sure.
Or had a, you know, a little bit of an over tendency to delve too much into some advanced metrics. Because, I mean, I'm a firm believer that advanced metrics are valuable, but I don't know if they always make great TV.
Fair enough.
But he's so much better than most everything I have heard from other markets.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And had really, really nice rapport with Jim Deshays.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, I mean, you've heard in other markets, and we've heard it, I think, sometimes even in Cubs broadcasts, where the two announcers, I mean, there's no chemistry. They sound like they're not even in the same room. And and those guys sounded like they liked each other, and they were enjoying watching a game together and watching a game with you. So, yeah, that's, and the early reports are that the Cubs are going to, you know, open it up to see who's available, but they apparently Marquee Network also has Chris Myers signed, that they had signed him at the beginning of the year. I didn't even know about this, that they were going to have him around to do studio work and to do play-by-play when Len was away doing Fox games.
Right.
So there is now some thought that they may just elevate him, which sounds like a good reason to get more acquainted with the radio side of the Cubs broadcast.
How did I describe that in my text earlier?
The Chris Myers move?
Yes.
I'm going to go look for that. I don't...
So I thought it was pretty good.
Wait a minute. Did you... Did you describe that to me?
I thought I did.
I don't think you did. A KFC log.
I think Ricketts wants Myers because Ricketts is a classless maroon that loves the sizzle more than the steak.
Yes, there it is. You're right, you did say that. Great.
By tasteless, or like lacking taste.
Now, you know what?
Right.
I was this close to getting Todd Ricketts on the podcast. He was looking for something to do.
Well, I was this close to putting the ixnay on that because I got no interest. Unless this is going to be a swearing podcast for that episode.
Okay. So we're both saddest about Len leaving. But I got to say this, and a bunch of people are already saying, oh, it can't be that he actually wanted to go be the radio voice.
No, I think it is.
I think it absolutely is. Everything I've read so far suggests that he said he's always wanted to do radio. He loves radio. You can hear it when he would be in the Cubs radio booth, like in playoff games and when there were national broadcasts.
Yeah.
Apparently he said he always has wanted to broadcast a World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Which either means you got to be the number one guy for one of the big networks or do it as your team's radio broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part that I thought was really great was that he said it was the fact that it was the White Sox job, not that specifically he didn't have to leave Chicago.
So yeah, like, I think he really liked living here.
He loved Chicago, and he wanted to do a radio job. And that opportunity came up.
Yeah, and the White Sox are... Other than their ownership has always been questionable, and
they have things to be excited about. Let's say that
that odd La Russa move, but otherwise that's a pretty exciting team. It's very reminiscent of the Cubs in 2015.
Yeah. And I would still say there's a non-zero chance that Tony La Russa ends up not finally being the announcer or the manager. Something happens. I'm not sure. But...
I like that non-zero chance reference.
Do you like that?
Yes.
So.
That's a Trump election fraud lawsuit joke, if any of you are wondering.
Yeah. So which of those three? So this is the second question then. Mm-hmm. So which of those three moves do you think is going to be the biggest impact long term?
I think it's also the Len Casper move.
And I agree with you there too.
Marquee was a train wreck this year.
Yeah, just pretty bad.
Oh my god! I mean, that's part of where my comment that I made about Ricketts. Marquee was like some sort of focus group driven, just. Horrible. It is one of those situations where you say, how did that come out of a focus group? Because nobody likes it.
Yeah.
You know, but the broadcasts were worse. Putting extra people in the booth.
Oh, the Mark Grace experiment. That was
Mark Grace and Rick Sutcliffe. I think it's become pretty clear that those guys aren't really good broadcasters.
No.
And then Ryan Dempster.
George Clooney. Sorry, you guys are going to have to Google Rick Sutcliffe, George Clooney reference to get that.
So, like, Ryan Dempster, I think Ryan Dempster could probably, if he's not just doing funny shtick,
mm-hmm.
could be an interesting color guy.
He could be similar to like Deshaies, I think.
Yeah, but I don't know that you need him and Deshaies in the booth at the same time, then.
Right.
And I think it's clear that the organization, you know, pseudo fans like Ricketts, are enamored with guys like Ryan Dempster.
Yeah.
For now, whatever reason.
Now you know what would be interesting. This is just spitballing this, because I have no reason to believe that Marquee cares what we think. Because we're not in their focus group. but, like, when you say that, I think you could have somebody like Ryan Dempster alongside Jim Deshaies. And Deshaies has been in this business long enough that even though he came in as a color commentator and usually ex-players are just thought of as color men, I think he could handle the play-by-play side of things.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting way you can do play-by-play where it's not the traditional...
Mm-hmm.
You know, full-on reportage. I don't know that you need that in TV as much anyway.
Right.
You could have a good informative conversation where that, you know, the balls and strikes and such is getting out there, and, you know, the somebody setting the scene, the situation, but it's more focused on, you know, the inside the line, you know, the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
What's going on inside the line, so, or, you know, what's getting that player's perspective.
Yeah.
I think that's the sort of thing that a lot of people want out of their sports commentary now anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, like, one place that has done this where they've got two players, because the classic model is kind of like you have a professional broadcaster who does the play-by-play, and then you have a color commentator who's a player who's adding in, you know, anecdotes and, you know, garbage. But one place, like in Oakland, the TV guys are both former players. It's Glenn Kuiper, and actually, so now there's a couple of guys. They use Glenn Kuiper. They also use Dallas Braden and Ray Fossey.
Mm.
And Kuiper tends to do the play-by-play, but all of the guys kind of are together on that, you know?
Interesting.
Although I just realized I'm saying Glenn Kuiper was a player, but his brother Dwayne was a player.
Yeah.
That's really bad. I missed that. Okay.
Well, you're certainly baseball adjacent, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's exactly not an example of what I was talking about. Just wanted to clarify that. But I do think that that's the kind of thing that can work.
Yeah, but that, there's...
But they're not going to do that.
There's a non-zero... There's a non-positive number chance of that happening.
That's right.
See that, but I think that would be interesting. But Marquis, I mean, Marquis required the announcers to wear suits in the booth.
It's a good call.
How stupid is that? Who cares about that?
You know what? I care deeply about that, Kevin, because during this pandemic, I needed some sign that we were actually back in the 1940s.
Exactly.
And so there it was. Yeah.
But I'm, you know, there's a lot of speculation that Marquis made the environment also less than comfortable or mm-hmm. enjoyable to work in, which hastened Len's willingness to,
yeah.
or in, you know, increase his willingness to take.
And when
this
you say Marquis, now you're talking about the nickname that everyone has for Mark Grace, right?
Yes, or the Marquis de Sade, I don't know.
I believe they call him Marquis.
They do now.
That's sticking. So.
The Marquis de Grace. So, yeah, and then, you know, I could just go off on how terrible it was being a Cub fan watching Marquis this year. It was,
yeah,
the studio work was horrible.
See, and I didn't get any of that because when you're...
You were quite lucky.
You only get the games and then that's it. So, studio work, not exciting?
No, the Cole whatever guy.
Cole?
Who was the guy they brought in?
Cole Hamels?
No. Almost certainly would have been better.
I like Cole Hamels.
Cole Miner would have been better. I don't know.
Samuel Coleridge?
Yes. I'd like to hear his take on a Cubs loss.
Yeah.
No, but he's one of those guys. He's got to have like a, you know, it's like an ESPN hip phrase for everything.
Yeah.
And it's exhaustingly stupid. You know, and the people they had, like, you know, Sean Marshall. I don't know what... That feels like you brought back Sean Marshall because he played for the Cubs in the 90s when you used to sit in the bleachers and pretend you were a Cubs fan and meet your wife and then later on buy the team with daddy's money.
Or hypothetically. You're still like...
Right. Hypothetically, in the 2000s, I should say, yes.
If one was... Yeah, okay.
I mean, if you're going to bring back something like that, bring back Travis Wood. That would be fun.
That would be fun. I would like to... Yeah.
Bring in Leon Durham.
Please.
I mean, or like Ryan Sandberg. I don't know. Bring back some... I mean...
Oh, don't bring in Ryan Sandberg.
But he's...
so boring.
Oh, boring would be better than what we were hearing.
Oh. I love Ryan Sandberg, but don't bring him in.
No, he really, Ryan Sandberg sounds like the kind of player he was.
Yes.
When you look at his game, you're like, he was a Hall of Famer.
Hmm?
But he wasn't exciting to watch.
No, he's not.
He was very workmanlike. You could believe the stories that he would take, like, you know, hundreds of ground balls before every game.
Yeah.
Because every ball hit to him, he made the play look exactly the same.
That's right.
That's part of why he was maybe the best defensive second baseman of all time.
Yeah.
But he wasn't like a, you know, exciting defensive player. He rarely left his feet, right?
Yeah, exactly. Noted for that. As a player, I would say he was like kind of the definition of, like, he would be the equivalent of a grammatically correct sentence. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cole Wright. I just found him. Cole Wright. That doesn't seem great.
I mean, he seems like a nice enough guy and everything, and I just think he's trying too hard, and I think that's exactly what Markey thinks people want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they brought in Mark DeRosa too. Ugh. That groan is because Mark DeRosa is one of the announcers on the PlayStation game MLB The Show,
mm-hmm.
and he's awful. He's awful on there. And I've played enough of that game now that I know all of the stock phrases he says. I can say them in my sleep. and they make me angry.
And I have fond memories of him as a player. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
They brought in Jason Hamill?
Yeah.
Why?
I would just rather... And it was like, okay, they said they brought in Ted Lilly, too, and then Ted Lilly never showed up. Now, I'm surprised they brought back Ted Lilly, because didn't he get hired for the front office, and then he had to go to jail? Or something.
I believe that was
for correct. Some tax evasion scheme or something.
Yeah, that is correct.
I would just rather don't bring in qualified people who didn't play for mediocre Cubs teams.
No.
You know, I mean, I don't need to be able to look at the screen and say, "Oh, I remember watching him pitch in relief." I mean, if you know what I mean, it's like, are they trying to? There's only one. There's very few situations where you're going to get like a Ron Santo sort of situation,
mm-hmm.
right?
But that's what everyone's always looking for. Every team is always looking for that, and that's all they're doing. They're just throwing masses, like they're just throwing bodies at the wall to see who will stick.
Right.
Mark Grace might stick because he was previously laying on the floor of a bar somewhere.
Covered in fluids of some kind.
So that's possible, you know? I think what would be more fun is if you brought in players just, like, for deeper, like, more subtle trolling purposes. So I would say you get Scott Feldman to come in and to do a studio show. But then when he comes in, all you want to talk about is Jake Arrieta era. Right?
Right.
That'd be amazing.
But I don't want to talk about any other era. When I'm watching games now,
but for I want to talk
about the today game. This era. The era called today. Or this season.
Uh-huh.
I don't need it's because Ricketts has turned the Cubs into a brand that's all about capitalizing on everyone's past nostalgia. Emotions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nostalgia factory. It's the Hallmark Channel for Cubs fans.
But I don't care.
That's horrible. I'm upset that I thought of that, but I think that's right.
I think it's exactly right. And the reality is, Okay, they're going to bring in Candace Cameron Bure to be the play-by-play, aren't they?
Well, I was thinking, if you want
or Lacey Chabert, or whatever.
If you want them to talk about the right now, then let's figure out who on the 2020 Cubs should be available for broadcasting in 2021. I'm thinking Patrick Wisdom, probably available.
Well, they could now have like Ryan Tepera, MVP mm-hmm. vote receiving
yeah.
relief pitcher.
Probably the only person to ever get an MVP vote and get non-tendered in the same year, right?
Almost certainly, yeah. I think
Josh Fegley might be available.
I see, there you go.
Might be ready to start his broadcasting career.
I think they should make a player run up from the clubhouse after the game to do post-game.
Yeah, I like that. Let's
see. And they'll send up a rookie.
Craig Kimbrell. No. We could use Craig.
Yeah, he had a nice year, actually.
Yeah, he did. You're right.
See, I just, to me...
Wait a minute, he had a 5.28 ERA.
He had a few bad outings, he had a real bad start, and then after that, he was actually quite good. I mean, when you're only, there's only 60 games in the whole season.
And he only pitched 15 innings.
Right. He started out awful for like his first five outings, and then after that, he was quite good, I think. I think it's a tough year to look at stats. Even a lot of the advanced stats, it's too small a sample size to understand.
It's been a bad time. The Craig Kimbrell era for the Cubs, though, has not been good.
No, it sure hasn't.
I think we can agree on that.
Is it worse than the Dave Smith era?
It's in the Dave Smith era, like, in that neighborhood.
The Mitch Webster era? It's not as good as that, actually, because there was a good year in the Mitch Webster era, wasn't there?
You mean Mitch Williams?
Yeah. Webster, I'd said, that doesn't apply in any way.
Well, Mitch Webster was a former Cub who was not good, but nobody thought he was going to be good.
But nostalgia doesn't mean anything to me during a season.
Right.
Or show me you've got this whole freaking network. Then, like, show me other nostalgic programming. Don't bleed that into the actual game itself.
Yeah.
You know, but the Ricketts are just... I'm just going to bleep myself right now.
They're just... Listen, they're growing the asset.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
But I'm not sure they actually... Long term, I think they've made some...
Oh, but I think they'll sell it for... I mean, when they sell it, it'll be a great investment.
Right, and that's... Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so something I would encourage everyone to do. Today, something pointed me in the direction of I think it was 1987, and Harry Carey missed the start of the broadcast season.
Yeah.
When they had people filling in,
uh-huh.
and for one game, Bill Murray filled in with Steve Stone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There was a video I found on YouTube
mm-hmm.
that was just highlights of that. It's about half an hour.
Oh, that's worth checking out. Absolutely.
It is.
Do you think you could link that? Like, let's link. Let's
yeah.
put a link to that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Eric Gregg was the umpire that game.
Oh, boy.
And that got commented on quite a bit.
I'm quite sure.
The umpire's equipment did not make it from their previous stop. So the game was delayed. The start of the game was delayed because they were looking for something for the umpires to wear. There was a lot of comments on finding something for Edgar Gregg to wear, which,
oh boy.
As a larger man myself, I...
Uh-oh. So there was some fat shaming going on.
Oh, there was. It's a different era, my friend.
Yeah, it was.
But he was outright just calling people on the other team trash. He was yelling out of the booth at people.
Yeah, I need to listen to that.
They were playing the Expos, which is nice too, because you get to see the Expos.
That's right.
Expos uniform, all of that, you know.
That might be why you were thinking of Mitch Webster.
Yeah, I think Mitch Webster was in that lineup. So that was...
By the way, here's a thought. I'm spitballing here again. this is somebody on Marquee's roster of on-air talent. I don't want Chris Myers as the play-by-play guy, but mm-mm. How about Lou Piniella? That'd be like postmodern, wouldn't it?
Well, then you'd gotta bring back Joe Carter.
Well, I think Jim DeShays is gonna just retire as soon as you let him.
Well, I think there's probably a better than 50% chance that Jim DeShays will not be in the booth next year either.
Well, but if they've got him under contract, unless he might try to get out of it now, but that would give them stability, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I like Jim DeShays.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the radio booth in Chicago, too. I think Ron Coomer, and I think they were kind of trying to do a little former Cub thing there as well,
mm-hmm.
even though he only played a season.
Yeah.
But he's a local guy, and actually, I think he...
And he's former All-Star. I believe I've heard Pat say that.
We get it, Pat. We get it. Okay, but I think I actually enjoy Ron Coomer.
Yeah, I've warmed up to him. I was when he first started, I couldn't really handle the grammatical failings.
He's a more insightful and easy to understand Ron Santo.
Yeah.
He's still like an everyday. He's a Chicago guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having an educated fan in the booth.
Yeah.
I mean, when he has some incredible insights on hitting, you know, it's really a good booth.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
And that's where I think it was a shame, because I think Len would have been nice maybe to see Len go to the Cubs booth, radio booth.
Sure.
But you're not deposing Pat Hughes at
no,
this point.
No, you're not.
Who is the Ryan Sandberg of broadcasters?
Pretty much. But the difference is that he knows he's a little bit of a dork, and he can lean into that when he needs to.
Yeah, and he does have a good sense of humor.
Yeah. You know. I think Len is going to raise DJ's game over on the south side a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Sox have a good TV booth now, and I think they'll have a good radio booth.
Yeah.
I think Jason Benetti is
he's great.
He is.
When I've heard him on the national stuff, I love him.
He is fun to listen to.
Yeah. So you're saying no on Lou Piniella?
I'm saying no on Lou Piniella, yes. Yeah. Unless you really just... You have to put some other sort of, you know, postmodern or Escher-esque color man with him.
I mean, I think if you fully depose Jim DeShays and just say, you're moving on, buddy, then I think if you make a three-man booth with, like, Piniella, Sutcliffe and Grace. And just let it... I mean, that's the 2020 of broadcast teams, isn't it?
That's unlistenable.
That is a garbage fire.
Any one of those three is unlistenable. You put...
Together, that's a science experiment. That's
you could put Ernie Harwell... Vince Scully and any one of those three in the booth together, and it's unlistenable.
And then for just special treat, when they play the Cardinals, they do some crosstalk with Mike Shannon.
Oh, God. Now, Mike Shannon and Ed Farmer kind of... Well, Ed, rest in peace. There was a former player who became a play-by-play guy.
You're right.
You'll
do anything to get away from Hawk. Who was another former player who was ostensibly a play-by-play guy.
Yeah, see, that was... Any booth he was in was a booth that did not have a play-by-play man, right?
That's right. Well, I mean... Unless the White Sox were winning.
Did they ever have him and Jimmy Pearsall together in the booth?
I don't think so.
That would have been so great.
I gotta look that up now, though. But
I would have liked Jimmy Pearsall, and oh, there's any number of people that would have been great with Jimmy Pearsall. Having had personal experiences with Jimmy Pearsall,
is Jimmy Pearsall still alive?
I can't imagine.
I know that he's not, because I just searched for Hawk Harrelson and Jimmy Pearsall, and the first headline I got was former outfielder, White Sox broadcaster Jimmy Pearsall dead. That's literally what it says.
And that's how he would have wanted it.
Oh. But here, apparently they did work together, I'm thinking.
Oh, my God. We've got to find a recording of that. Oh, my God. I mean, are you imagining that in your head right now?
I'm trying not to.
Oh, no. That's got to be beautiful.
Oh. I'm trying to find it. I don't... Like, every article about Jimmy Pearsall is so full of just, like, everything else.
Should I tell one of my Jimmy Pearsall stories?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, can I?
We've run longer than I think we were going to, but yeah, you might as well go for it.
Well, then maybe this will be where we cut it.
All right.
I don't know that I have one that's clean.
I don't know if there is one that's clean.
So there was a prospect, Jeremy Gonzalez, who ended up pitching for the Cubs, who came to Daytona where I was midway point through the season. I think Jeremy Gonzalez is dead now.
Oh, you're right, he is.
There's a few pitchers, prospects from that era. Anyway, so Jeremy Gonzalez came in. He was like 19, 18 or 19.
It appears, just so that you know, the Hawk did not work with Jimmy Pearsall.
Oh, man.
He worked with Tom Pishorek, Wimpy.
I had high hopes for Tom Pishorek stabbing Hawk Harrelson at some point. But truly, he earned the name Wimpy.
Sorry, go ahead.
So, Jimmy Pearsall was a roving outfield instructor for the Cubs at the time. And he had come into town, and he was... before the game, he wanted to shower as well. He'd been out on the field. It's hot and steamy in Florida in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And he had the body of a 70-some-year-old man, which he was, yeah. Right? Yeah. This, I think, was not... I don't think that Jeremy Gonzalez had ever showered with an old man before. Didn't like what he saw. To be fair, I understand some of it now. There was, like, some scaly skin and things. You know, it was... Yeah. Yeah, these things happen. We understand this. Uh-huh. But Jeremy Gonzalez made a big issue of it. A very loud issue of it. And went storming back to his locker and was... Which, by the way, they're not lockers like you would see in a high school.
No.
You may not know that. But he's going on and on and on about it. And Jimmy Pearsall comes out, the towel around his waist, and does not appear to enjoy that the young player is... having fun at his expense. And he comes up behind him, and Jeremy Gonzalez is still talking about it, and Jimmy Pearsall drops his towel and urinates on Jeremy Gonzalez's back.
Oh. The minor leagues are...
yeah.
Their magical place.
So. Locker room went dead silent after that. Other than the screams of Jeremy Gonzalez.
Yes. I'm assuming then at that point Jimmy Pearsall owned the locker room.
He really did before that. People were trying to get Jeremy Gonzalez to... hush up, because they felt there could be trouble.
And they were right.
They were quite correct. yeah. Yeah, no, those were good times.
Good times. All right. Well, having fondly remembered the departed Jeremy Gonzalez and the departed Jimmy Pearsall, the less departed but still gone from our TV booths, Len Casper. You know, Hawk's available.
No, because... All right, Ozzie Guillen, right? He loves Wrigley.
Oh, that'd be good. That's a good one. I like that.
I think there's a lot of people that would be real nice to bring in.
You know, I just thought of somebody else who's available. This job ends January 20th. So he's probably available by spring training. He's got experience in television.
Oh, stop. No, Mike Pence was a radio guy.
I was thinking of Stephen Miller.
No. No. No, I think we're good with our level of anti-Semitism in the booth being zero.
Mm. Today's game is brought to you by white people. When you need civilization to be exactly right, you need white people.
No, he should really broadcast in Boston.
Oh, oh. Yeah. All right. I think... We may have reached the end.
I think we reached the end a while ago. But that's... What you're saying now is we should stop this.
Before...
before I tell another Jimmy Pearsall story?
I tell Jimmy Pearsall story. I do more Steve Miller impersonations. Wait, Stephen Miller. You don't want to confuse
Steve like Miller. Like from the band?
Steve Miller band, right? He also could be available to be the Cubs play-by-play voice.
Every time there's a home run.
Perfect. Okay. First base today is winner. Second base is center. Third base is lover. Shortstop is a grinner.
He is. Oh, boy.
All right.
So we're sticking around. We're sticking around in a gun quit, Maine, right? Maine. You were telling me something that you were at their website today.
Yeah. I was just checking in with the people of a gun quit. It's a rough time there a little bit. They're having some controversy with their town manager. They're not renewing the town manager's contract, but they've also not fired the town manager. So they're asking the town manager to stick around until they find a new one, which is an uncomfortable kind of lame duck status. Again, Stephen Miller will be available January 20th, if not sooner. Can you imagine Stephen Miller running a small seaside Maine town? Be pretty great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think I could come up with that. It wouldn't be pretty, but...
That's a sitcom waiting to happen.
I could write a story about that.
Yeah.
That really is... You need a... That's like a Stephen King.
You're right.
No, well, isn't it?
Just by having Stephen Miller in there, it is. Yeah. So anyway, they're going through a difficult time. Plus, it's clamming season right now.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
They're having some dog-related controversy.
Yeah, what did you say it said on the website?
So on the website, under news and announcements, list of news and announcements, there's like statement on the town manager's contract renewal,
mm-hmm.
Christmas by the Sea, the COVID-19 task force, clamming season. And then it just says, dogs are not as all capitals, dogs are not permitted. That's it.
Is that a hot link or anything?
It is a link. If you click on it, it says dogs are not permitted on the first Ogunquit Beach area from April 1st to September 8th. Second, odd. The Marginal Way from April 1st through September 30th. I don't know what the Marginal Way is. I don't know if that's a, like a monastic order that I'm not as familiar with. I don't know.
It's something on the edges, right?
And they're also, it says, Ogunquit River Estuary, Neva Eva. N-E-V-A-H, E-V-A-H, Neva Eva.
It's meaning that they can't ever be there.
I believe that's
correct. I don't think it's a person named Neva Eva.
No.
Right. I like that little bit of...
I also don't think it's like satanic backward masking, where it actually says, have haven. Although...
Quite Neva, the opposite, really, right?
Neva Eva, backwards, is have haven. So, yeah.
Neva? Neva Eva?
So,
I mean, there's a little bit of a humor in that when they spell it Neva Eva.
Yeah. It, some self-awareness the regional dialect.
Yep.
So, but it appears that their sense of humor does not extend to dogs, because they seem to not be big fans. So I'm still trying to find out what that's about.
I wonder if all of these things are related, that it's clamming season, that we've got the COVID going on, and that their village manager?
Town manager, yeah.
Town manager is on the outs. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, could be.
Like, is this some sort of...
between all these things.
Right.
A thread. Like, maybe the town manager was down at the beach or at the estuary with her dog, not wearing a mask, and the dog, like, dug up a
scared off
clams.
All the clams?
Scared off the clams. Yes.
What does a scared clam do? I don't know. Or did the clams get COVID?
You know, Seymour, you steam a good ham.
What?
Well, I was thinking of clams. I was thinking of steamed clams.
Oh, yes.
And I was thinking of steamed hams.
Oh, boy. So, okay. I think, well, we figured this out then.
Yeah. So,
nevertheless, it's still risky to... up and change things.
Yeah.
At this time.
Plus, things are bad right now. It's not a good time to be moving around. So.
No, the CDC said the next 3 months will be the worst public health crisis in American history.
Yeah.
After.
Great.
These last nine we've dealt with.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right.
Which, again, Kimberly Guilfoyle said the best is yet to come.
Oh.
But it's not entirely clear that Kimberly Guilfoyle has the same standards as the rest of us. Because she thinks Don Jr. is dating material.
Oh, God.
I made it political. My apologies.
We've made this very political today. Not just talking about the Ogunquit town manager.
Yeah. All right.
It's okay. Things are political right now. It is what it is. You know what I mean? I mean, come on.
I haven't gotten an update on Don Jr.'s recovery, have you?
From the Rona?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just kind of
a special person to go on social media and say, I got the Rona. Yes, he did.
No, man. See, there's really, I have.
Do we need to stop now?
Yes. And.
All right. So,
bye-bye.
So it's been good talking to all of you. If you made it this far, blessings upon you.
I'm sorry.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Until next time, a goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Strange as it seems, I can't stop dreaming a dream. Strange as it seems.